Hello, I'm Polish MBA. I'm your host, Monique Mills. In this episode, I'm going to start it off by sharing a little bit about what's happening with me and one of my businesses before we hop in. It's relevant to the episode with Mark Sinatra, who is on, and his company is an outsourced HR company. And we're going to get into that during the episode. I mentioned in the interview that, in all transparency, I did use the company to help me in due diligence for a small business that I recently had under contract in order to do HR due diligence. And that's one of the services they provide complimentary. And so I'm hopping in right now to give you guys some insight on how the work that his company did is relevant to any of you that have search funds or are acquiring businesses, especially small businesses that are not as professionalized as, let's say, a more established corporate business. Not to say that these small businesses don't make money, because they do. They make millions, tens of millions of dollars being unprofessionalized. But there are things that are risky to you as a buyer that should be caught, investigated, analyzed, whatever you want to call it, during the due diligence process. So that's why I'm coming on right now to kind of tell you a bit about my experience with the whole HR due diligence part and some of the things that Mark's company asked me to get information on, and we went through together to analyze where the company was that I had under contract. So one of the things that they requested, which I hadn't thought of, and I think you guys had not thought of, probably have not thought of either, is to request from the seller I-9 verification for all of the employees. And basically, if you don't know a lot about that, E-Verify is where you get verification that all of your employees are authorized to work in the U.S. So there are very strict laws from the Department of Labor on that and being authorized to work in the U.S. and all of the politics around immigration and so on has made this topic even more important for those of us that's in this space. So I requested the verification information, and lo and behold, the sellers said that they did not have any and they've never done that for any of their employees. Whether or not that is true, I don't know. But they wanted to push it out until after closing and just do that after closing, because if we ask now, they might get suspicious that we're selling the company, so on and so forth. So that was kind of their excuse. And I said, no way. This is something that needs to be done now so we can confirm that the workers we have now are the ones that we'll have post-closing. In this particular business, the employees are critical to the company making money because it was a manufacturing environment and they are responsible for that aspect of it. So basically there is no product without the employees. And if they are not authorized to work in the U.S. or if there is any other uncertainty around their authorization to be in the U.S., not even just work, then you know, that's a risk that you take on as a buyer. And that's definitely not a position you want to be in when you're newly acquiring a company and have, you know, millions of debt that you've taken out in order to do it. And then you lose your workforce because they're not authorized and you can't produce your product, which means you can't serve your customers, which means, you know, it's just a domino effect, right? So That was one thing that was enlightening. And as I mentioned, we found that once I required that it was something that needed to be provided to us before we would move forward, we found that several of the employees were not authorized to work in the U.S. Now, that wasn't the deal breaker totally for this deal. There was other things that I found, but I just want to talk to you guys a little bit about some of the things to consider in the due diligence part, but I'm only telling you about the HR part, which is relevant to this episode. So that's one. If you do not know about the I-9 or the E-Verify status of the employees, please look into that. The other thing that Mark's company asked me to get was the employee handbook. When you look at the existing employee handbook of a company you're considering, it tells you a lot about the structure in place, if there's any, of the company. It also tells you quite a bit about the culture that the, you know, now sellers have put into place, if anything. Sometimes it's just very willy-nilly and there's really no structure in place. The employee handbook will also tell you their rules and regulations as far as like holiday time, requesting time off, vacation. It may even talk about benefits in there, you know, things that come with being an employee. But it gives you some insights that if you are still, you know, learning about the company in order to consider if you want to buy it, those are things you definitely want to know. And you will find, especially with a lot of these smaller companies, that there is not a lot of structure there. An employee handbook, if they have one, is very, very skimpy. Very skimpy. The other thing that the Mark's company asked me to look into was getting detailed staff job descriptions and roles and responsibilities. So for every person that works for a company, they should have a job title and they should have job descriptions that say what they do, what they're responsible for. We found that there was no job description. So that again gives you, most of them didn't even have legitimate titles. And you will find that when things are, again, I hate using this word over and over again, but willy-nilly, when things are willy-nilly, it gives you some insight to the lack of structure and how that lack of structure is also an indication of the culture that you may be walking into or acquiring, which could make things more or less challenging for you post-acquisition. So I just want to mention those things because they may seem like, oh, you know, that's just normal. What company doesn't have an employee handbook or doesn't know that all of the employees are authorized to work or doesn't have job descriptions or job titles? You know, what company doesn't have that? Let me tell you, many companies don't have that. And a lot of times when they're going to sell the company and they know they have to provide these kind of things, they'll just throw something together just to give to you. And it doesn't mean that's what they've been abiding by all of that time. I always like to share some more details on what's happening with me because, as you all know, I don't just have Unpolished MBA to just have it. I like to be able to share what is actually happening out here in the business world. I don't just talk about startups. I've built a startup. I've worked with over 1,000 founders. I don't just talk about small business acquisitions. I'm actually involved in it. So everything I talk about, I do. And it's important to kind of pull the curtain back sometimes and let you guys know some of the things that I have learned throughout this journey. And if you guys have any questions, of course, you can always reach out to us, go to our website, Unpolished MBA, and you can always reach out to me on LinkedIn as well. So with that, let's hop into the episode. So, Unpolished MBA audience, I want to welcome today a special guest by the name of Mark Sinatra. Mark is a 7-time Inc. 500 CEO, and he currently leads Aspen HR, and which is we're going to get into that, but we're going to talk about HR due diligence and all that. And he's also an investor in the search fund community. And so, Mark, I want to welcome you to the podcast. Welcome.
Thank you, Monique. I appreciate it. And good to be here.
Yeah, thanks for coming. I kind of fumbled a little bit with talking about Aspen HR because I want you to kind of describe what you guys do overall, but also for search entrepreneurs. And just by the way, full disclosure, everyone, in my acquisition process, I did use Aspen HR. So just full disclosure, y'all. So I know what they're capable, what good work they could do. So, Mark, I want you to describe those two things. What does Aspen HR do? And then, like, what do you do for the ETA community?
Yeah, no, thank you so much. So just by way of background, I've been in the ETA space for 15 years and been running also the businesses for 15 years as well. So it kind of like the two worlds kind of merged, because I first got into the PEO HR outsourcing industry through a search fund that I did after business school. So,
okay. School did you go to, Mark?
Went to Wharton.
Oh, see? So, uh-oh. you wanted a big guys. Okay, got it.
Well, it was there when I first learned about the whole search fund concept, right? And it was just one of those things to me. It was like, wow, like mm-hmm. I had 100% clarity that it was something that I was going to pursue at some point. So I did a search for 18 months, found a PEO based in Oklahoma at the time, and kind of cobbled together a deal to buy that company. Name of that company was called Staff1 HR. I ran that for about 9 years. And then we sold that to our largest privately held competitor called Oasis Outsourcing. That was in 2017. Then I was with them for about 18 months. And about 12 months into that 18-month period, Oasis, which had bought my search fund company, they then sold to Paychex, which, you know, it's a publicly traded company. And so I transitioned out of that fully about 6 months after that deal, took a little bit of time off, and then I got involved with Aspen HR, like I said, about a year later. And at first, I loved the industry. So sorry for that kind of long-winded context.
No, that's good.
I thought it'd be helpful, because what we do is we provide small, medium-sized companies with really full-service turnkey HR support, really across four main areas. So we provide HR compliance through kind of what I would call fractional HR support and management, payroll processing. We provide an HR technology platform. And then we also offer Fortune 500 level benefits to companies that aren't large enough to typically afford that. Mm-hmm. So those are the main areas that we make an impact and we provide a service for. We've essentially kind of curated a unique offering for the ETA community, because what I realize is a lot of companies that search funds will end up acquiring do tend to have anywhere between 5 to 100 employees. That's the vast majority of these acquisitions at the time of purchase. And they typically have never, these are companies that have never sold before. And as a result, the HR function is usually non-existent, pretty under-professionalized, and definitely an area of opportunity to professionalize post-acquisition. And even before then too, it's important for that searcher to at least get a really good understanding of what they're buying from an HR perspective. And so what we've been able to do is we have crafted together a HR diligence service offering that we provide to searchers that helps them really get a good look under the hood in terms of any HR compliance risks. Are there opportunities to improve upon the employee benefits that the employees are currently receiving?
All right, let's take a moment to thank the biggest sponsor of the Unpolished MBA. That's TPM Focus. TPM Focus is a strategy consulting firm that helps startups and small business owners generate revenue and find their way to profitability when they're launching a new product or in a new market. So reach out to tpmfocus.com. TPM stands for The Profit Matters, focus.com.
We took a look at their HR processes and if there's ways to automate or streamline those. And so we kind of package it all up together through what we call a high-level HR audit report. And we summarize those findings to the searcher as part of their overall due diligence. And long story short, it kind of summarizes the findings in three areas. One would be,
Before you go into those areas, I want to go back.
Yeah.
You kind of discussing how to professionalize some of these businesses once we buy them. You were being very nice in the way you described the existing HR, if that's what you want to call it, within a lot of these small businesses. You were really nice in the way you described it, because it's pretty much non-existent. And folks don't know either where They don't know where to start. Those who are buying coming from corporate have a way too corporate of a mindset about HR. So it's like one extreme that wouldn't work in a small business. Like you can't come in turning it into a Coca-Cola or whatever as far as like HR right. goes. And so then on the other end is non-existent. But you guys at Aspen, from my experience, you understand like the small business dynamics, right? And so it's not yes. overkill. That's the thing. Like it's not overkill for the situation. And I want you to now continue on the things that you guys look for, right?
I appreciate you mentioning that, because there are some real basic, I would say, HR tactical HR elements that we have found that are typically missing in a lot of these small companies. So things like looking at job titles to ensure that there's some level of like consistency and also congruency between the title and what the employee is actually doing. Do all employees have updated job descriptions? Along with a lot of people don't realize, a job description, it serves multiple purposes. I mean, it provides clarity to the employee and what their expectations are in terms of the actual role, but it's also serves as a legal document as well to properly codify and document the expectations and whether the role yeah. is full-time, part-time, exempt, non-exempt. You know, we also do, this is very common, where we'll do an evaluation of the workers. And if there's W-2 employees or if there's 1099 workers, are those 1099 workers classified appropriately? What we found is some smaller companies will tend to be overly, tend to lean towards classifying workers as 1099s. When you kind of dig into it, perhaps from a legal perspective, they should be classified as W-2 employees. Why? So we'll do that analysis. Hmm. We'll also do an analysis where exempt versus non-exempt, where if an employee is classified as being like full-time exempt from overtime, but then you dig into like what they're actually doing and you figure out, okay, well, they should be non-exempt from overtime. So
that's a big issue. I just want to tell you. So a lot of us in this that's buying small businesses and searching, we found that people really don't have job titles or accurate ones. So I'll give you an example. One of the ones actually you guys looked at for me, one person's role said, I'll just make up a name, helps David. Like David is another employee. And it's just like, what does help David mean? You know what I mean? Like that is the description of their role when asked for that information, right? And so what do you suggest for those entrepreneurs who are buying these businesses and the sellers don't really have job titles or descriptions? It's just kind of willy-nilly. How do we work with that?
Oh, it's definitely part of the 90-day post-acquisition plan for that entrepreneur, right, that's buying that business. Mm-hmm. And it's something that you want to do anyway, right? When you are handed the keys to the business, you need to understand the nuts and bolts of the company. And a great way to do that is having authentic one-to-one conversations with those employees, understanding what they're doing from a day-to-day perspective, mm-hmm. but also understanding, like, from their view, are they doing what things that are reflective of their expectations, are reflective of their job title. And what we found in particularly like smaller companies, there's a lot of what we call utility players, where the smaller companies by definition don't have the resources like that larger competitors do. So oftentimes you'll have employees that they have a certain job title, but they end up doing a whole bunch different things. And I think finding talent that's agile, that's able to pivot, can be very helpful to a small growing organization. But at the same time, you want to make sure that the employee is fully aware of what's expected of them in terms of their job. So I really think it's what we advise entrepreneurs is really just to spend first 90 days post-acquisition, just getting to know the business, getting to know the people, right? Getting to know like what motivates them, getting to know them on a personal level as well. But on a professional level, like just like I said, like making sure you understand really what they're doing day to day. And is it something that they enjoy doing? And is what else do they want to be doing in the business?
So. Yeah, that's a great point. First coming in, I mean, even when we were working regular jobs and going into a new office as the boss, like people are scared of you. So in these situations where we're buying the companies, people are scared, like, oh my God, is my job going to be eliminated? How is this person? So it's a lot of trying to fill each other out. And so with that, you're talking about like post-acquisition, really drilling in on understanding what folks do and creating those job titles and writing out the roles and stuff.
That's definitely like a post-acquisition exercise. Just getting to know, again, like the employees and what they're doing on a day-to-day basis. I will give some caution, though, about changing job titles too soon. Yeah. There is the old adage, like you don't want to make many changes at all, if at all possible, within the first few to several months post-acquisition. You need to first really understand the business and your team. Like you said, like when you come in as a new buyer, everybody's watching you. Everybody's watching what you're doing, what you're not doing. And these small companies are very fragile. So you have to be very cognizant and careful about changes. Like, now I'm not saying like at all that you should be changing job titles day one, because a job title is very meaningful to the employee. What I found is job titles are actually much more meaningful to the employee than to the employer. So you have to be very careful about making those types of changes. But it's more about in the early days, like I said, really understanding what each and every employee does and making sure that the expectations have been kind of clarified with them in the past, and that you set a good cadence of either for your direct reports, a weekly one-to-one, but also have those two-level conversations down as well, like making sure that you have and you're visible and you have some sort of a dialogue with other folks in the organization who may not report to you. I think that's also going to be important. One other point I definitely want to touch on, though, is on the employee benefits piece, because, you know, what I found is a lot of these companies are really underinvested in providing, you know, kind of a comprehensive employee benefits package. And sometimes that's due to cost, quite honestly. Mm-hmm. But part of the benefit of a PEO like Aspen HR is that the way that we're set up is we're able to offer what we call large group insurance. So insurance is basically health insurance is classified small group versus large group. In most states, it's, you know, you're a large group employer for insurance purposes if you have more than 100 or more than 50 employees, depends on the state. But, you know, because of how Aspen is structured, we're able to provide large group benefits often at significant savings. I'm talking like thousands of dollars of in savings to companies that could only have like 10, 15, 20 employees. Right. So that is something that we always advise like these search entrepreneurs to at least take a look and do the analysis. Not saying like, again, like changing benefits day one is something you have to be very careful about doing. So certainly not advising that, but at least like doing the analysis so that you have a view, and maybe like 12 months post-acquisition, you can put together a plan and say, well, if you move over to a PEO and you're able to provide a higher quality benefits package at a lower cost, that could be actually a nice win to the employees to have certainly like higher value insurance at a lower cost. So that is one thing I wanted to mention, because it usually what we see is companies, if they go in the what I call in the open market in the exchange, they're often, the way it's structured is they're often overpaying for medical insurance, just the way that, you know, because it's not underwritten. So anyway, I don't want to get into the particulars, but that is something that we see as often a kind of a value enhancing activity 12 months post acquisition is improving the employee benefit package.
Yeah, that's a big one, because I don't really see much of a benefits package as far as especially health insurance for a lot of the small businesses I've looked at. You mentioned those things doing post-acquisition. Is there a couple of things that searchers can do up front, like pre-acquisition, like when they're still in the due diligence phase? What are some of the things that absolutely they should confirm before closing on a deal? Like, what's a deal breaker or two?
Yeah, I mean, from an HR perspective, I mean, there's not, I would say, you know, a long list of deal breakers per se, but there definitely are a few like kind of big priorities. And part of it depends on the structure of the acquisition, stock versus asset purchase. Mm-hmm. Of course, as we all know, like in an asset purchase, for the most part, you're not really inheriting prior liabilities and stock purchase, you know, you are. So, you know, that does inform a little bit as to the depth of the diligence in some areas. But I will say, like, regardless of how the deal is structured, you know, you definitely want to get a good sense of the W-2 versus 1099, particularly like get a list of those 1099 workers, and you use a company like ours that can at least do some sort of like a cursory analysis and say, well, those workers are being, you know, properly classified or they're not. Sometimes like your attorney in the transaction can help with that as well. So wherever you get that advice, that is something that we certainly definitely advise buyers to do, is to do that level of analysis. I would also say you want to get a good sense of employees that have actually left the company. Ask for a list of terminated employees in the last like 24 to 36 months, you know, whether they were involuntary, voluntary terms, the reason for those terminations, if there was an exit interview. Also, I would say get demographical information on those employees as well. Just want to get a good sense of what their employee turnover rate has been, if it has been kind of trending higher than what you deemed it to be acceptable, like what are the drivers behind that, can kind of give you a good view into the culture of the business and perhaps opportunities to enhance or improve that. So, and then also, we definitely would always ask to get a copy of all job descriptions, copy of the employee handbook, read through the policies, and also you want to make sure that a handbook is up to date with all recent local, state, and federal laws, regulations. To the extent that towards the later stage of due diligence, you're offered an opportunity to talk to some of the employees and managers, definitely would advise you to do that. Obviously, in person, you can just learn a lot just through having like basic conversations. It's also a great opportunity for you as the incoming leader to start to build that trust and credibility that you mentioned earlier in this podcast, Monique.
Yeah. Mark, well, I know there's so much more you could add to this conversation. And so what I'm going to do is tell Full Talented best get in touch with you. So what's the best place to connect with you and learn more about Aspen HR?
Yeah, definitely shoot me over an email if we can help or if I can talk about any topic of mine. So it's Mark with a K at AspenHR.com. It's our website as well, www.AspenHR.com. And look me up on LinkedIn as well, and happy to help where we can.
Yeah. All right, Mark. I'm going to put links to all of that in the show notes. And Mark, I want to thank you for joining the podcast and sharing with us today.
Thanks, Monique. Yeah, I really appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to the Unpolished MBA podcast. To hear more episodes or to request to become a guest, please visit unpolishedmba.com.